Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Tuesday, September 20th. Today, we're visiting with the Colorado Sun's environment reporter, Michael Booth, about greenhouse gas emissions in Colorado not dropping quickly enough, and about efforts to change landscaping trends. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our sponsors at Xcel Energy. Xcel Energy can help you find ways to keep your home or business running smoothly while reducing energy use and saving you money. Find everyday tips for using less energy and simple ways to manage your energy budget at xcelenergy.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this day, in 1877, the mining town of Lake City, high in the San Juan Mountains, buzzed with activity as people packed the Hinsdale County Courthouse past capacity. The crowd proved so large that the featured speaker, renowned women's suffrage advocate Susan B. Anthony, agreed to deliver her remarks on the grounds outside. In 1876, Colorado's constitutional authors chose to extend voting rights to women in school board elections only. The General Assembly authorized a ballot measure the next year to determine how far the state's franchise should extend. The election drew attention from around the country. A Pennsylvania newspaper, quoted in a Colorado Springs paper, noted that, quote, "While only the men will have access to the ballot box, the women, who constitute the most interested party, are conducting the campaign with matchless spirit and enterprise." The most prominent national suffragist to visit Colorado before the election, Anthony, arrived in Denver on September 11th. She focused her efforts on miners and ranchers in the southern part of the state, including remarks in Las Animas and Sawatch, while other advocates canvassed the eastern slope cities. After two speeches in Lake City, Anthony traveled to the boomtown of Leadville, where Governor John Rout stood at her side in support of the cause. Anthony's tour culminated with a speech in Denver shortly before the October election. The eager campaign notwithstanding, men rejected equal voting rights by more than a 2-to-1 margin. Some in the press considered the matter of women's suffrage settled nationally as a result. Advocates kept up the pressure regardless, and when male voters considered the question again in 1893, the outcome proved decidedly different. Before we continue, the Colorado Sun invites you to attend Ski Area Bosses with outdoors reporter Jason Blevins virtually on October 6th. Hear from industry experts about lessons learned over the last few seasons, challenges about climate, housing, and much more. Visit coloradosun.com/events to register for free. Now our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up Podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation, and I'm grateful to be here with you. Today, I'm visiting with the Colorado Sun's environmental reporter, Michael Booth. Thanks for coming back, Mike.
Thanks for having me on. Always appreciate it.
Ditto. And you've got some great environmental stories that you're working on. One of the things I wanted to touch on was the state had given mandates on cutting greenhouse gas emissions. And it sounds like, you know, we as a state are failing miserably. Tell us a little bit more about that.
It was a rough week of news on the air pollution front, both from greenhouse gases and ozone in Colorado. And the first thing that happened was the state did give an update. We are supposed to be cutting greenhouse gas emissions in Colorado by 26% in 2025 from levels that were baselined in 2005, and then 50% by 2030. And a lot of that's going to be accomplished by switching coal-fired power plants, which are the big sort of blowtorches of smokestacks in greenhouse gas emissions in Colorado, switching them to something else, or clean renewable fuels, or worst case scenario, some natural gas to bridge us over. And that's being done, and that's on schedule, and those cuts are going well. But what the state updated the Air Quality Control Commission about was that we are still falling behind, mostly because we haven't done enough nearly on transportation. And transportation is now becoming an equal sector in greenhouse gas emissions to electrical generation. And we're just not doing the hard choices, making the hard demands of consumers and businesses that need to happen in order to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from cars and trucks and things related to transportation. The way that you do that is by getting people to either drive fewer miles in the cars that they have, or getting them to switch the cars and vehicles that they are driving to cleaner burning electrical trucks and cars. And we're falling behind, even though we have taken some actions as a state. We're just not doing it fast enough. And the environmental groups are saying, look, the decisions you've made in the last 2 years are now coming home to roost, showing that we're not cutting fast enough. You have delayed some difficult decisions. You have scrapped another major decision to slow down the growth in commuting miles because you got big pushback from the Chamber of Commerce and a lot of business groups. You just scrapped it altogether and didn't do it. And so now those decisions are starting to show up in where we are on greenhouse gases overall.
And these decisions are basically legislative, like statewide legislative decisions that either no action was taken on or that did not pass or get signed into law?
It was legislation initially to set the greenhouse gas caps was passed in 2019. And basically the entire structure of air pollution control, the energy office, electrification in Colorado, and environmental justice has been set up around that 2019 law to point everything toward these percentage cuts that need to be made. And so there have been huge rounds of negotiations going on with the power companies about switching away from coal. There have been mandates made to automakers and auto dealers to sell a higher and higher percentage of electric cars every year. But that turnover in particular is happening very slowly. Colorado is among the leaders in switching to electric vehicles, but it's still happening. We do well compared to other states, but compared to our goals, it's not happening fast enough.
The folks that you talk to, Mike, what do they point to as the thing that will get this ball rolling faster and not keep having it be later and later for us?
Two major things in transportation that they feel can be done, and they were asking the Air Quality Control Commission to speed up their schedule on doing it. One is passing a so-called advanced clean trucks rule, which California has already done, and a lot of states are modeling their work after California, as we did in our first clean cars rule. And that requires, over the next few years, if it passes, that big fleets of trucks and government vehicles and private vehicles slowly switch over, but steadily switch over to electrified or, in some cases, if they can get the technology better, hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. And that would reduce the diesel smoke that's so bad for both ozone formation and creating greenhouse gases. The second thing they feel that can be done quicker is the second round of clean cars, so passenger vehicles, the things that most of us drive around every day. We now have some mandates in place about how quickly to switch over. California has gone much farther, much faster, and said they will not sell any gasoline-powered cars in California after 2035. And that's the clean cars 2 mandate. And they want the Air Quality Control Commission to pass that as quickly as possible in 2023 and get us down that road to catch up with California.
Yeah. And I remember you talking about that earlier this month. You had the I-25 in your drive panel where you had some experts on. And I believe it was the day that that was announced or the day after that California announced that. And, some of the panelists weighed in on that pretty strongly on both sides of state mandating more and more electric vehicles.
Glad you mentioned that panel because people can still go watch it on the Colorado Sun's YouTube channel. And we hope that they do because a big decision has been made on that about all the things we talked about at that panel. There's a big gap in having a third lane on I-25 North between Denver and Fort Collins. There's still a gap in there where it's only two lanes. Northern Colorado business interests and Chamber of Commerce and some elected officials want that gap filled in. They want a express lane that is a toll lane to fill that in. And what happened this past week is CDOT announced that they have found the money to do that in their 10-year plan. And they will be a combination of money that they have from different funds and money that will come from the toll revenue itself. And so they're saying that fills in a major gap. Now, the people who are on the panel were protesting construction of new highways, saying that's exactly what we shouldn't be doing because of greenhouse gas limits and ozone problems. We'll say that's the wrong decision, but CDOT is saying they are moving forward and that is still in the 10-year plan.
Well, and it's movement on the issue, I guess, one way or the other. And the other thing I was thinking about with this and with EVs is, you have the city and county of Denver right now, since July, has been giving out monthly vouchers for electric bikes and electric cargo bikes. And so I think, I don't know if other counties will follow suit in Denver's example, but that, I believe, is an effort to put more and more folks on pedals and electric bikes versus vehicles.
Incentives really work when they're high enough to make a difference in people's buying habits. And it works in electric vehicles, cars as well. As we know, when Colorado's incentives are high and they can be combined with a big federal subsidy, it moves cars much faster and can make this all happen much faster. Of course, when you add multiply a couple $1,000s per vehicle times millions of people in Colorado, it becomes a big ticket item very fast. So that's more decisions that will have to be made over the next few years, is whether Colorado has the money to boost those incentives at the same time.
Exactly. And to your point on changing habits and incentivizing people, you also are covering different ways of landscaping and the ways that some municipalities are trying to motivate folks to landscape their property differently. Fill us in on that a little bit.
Sure. And we'll be talking about this in the Temperature newsletter, which we're coming up on our 1 year anniversary and want to celebrate that and thank everybody for joining on that. And for people who do not subscribe to that, it's a premium subscription, but well worth your money between John Ingalls Health Reporting and what we do on the environment and climate and where those things intersect. We think it's very important for people to stay up on Colorado news. And we don't feel like there's any news product like it in terms of aggregating that with our own original reporting. So on that front, there is a new study from the Desert Research Institute out of Nevada, where they studied some landscaping in Tempe, Arizona, similar arid climate to Denver and Las Vegas and a lot of cities in the West. They were looking at the difference between how you landscape, the traditional turf grass surrounding islands of big trees, which we have in a lot of Denver neighborhoods that sucks down a lot of water and uses up to half of the municipal water in Denver and surrounding suburbs, versus one major alternative, which has been xeric landscaping, also called xeriscaping, which got a bad name in the last 10 years. And people don't like the idea of just replacing everything in their yard with hot rocks. So what they try to do is look at what happens to ambient temperature around that kind of landscaping. And what they find is no big surprise that when you have a lot of green turf, the air feels cool, up to 5 degrees cooler than concrete and 5 degrees cooler than xeriscaping. And people like that. And so if you take that away and force everybody to go straight to xeriscaping, they're going to see a difference in their lifestyle. They're going to see a difference in their comfort level in their neighborhoods. As global warming and climate change happen, it'll get even hotter in their neighborhoods. So what they're looking at is there a third way, a third alternative? And what they studied was so-called oasis landscaping, where you use low water plants, water smart plants, in small islands around your yard and in the median, with maybe small patches of turf, but not 2,000 square feet of Kentucky bluegrass that sucks down all that water. Small islands of green surrounded by mulch or rocks, preferably mulch and soil, and see where that leaves you on temperature. And what they found is that kind of oasis style landscaping uses a lot less water and leaves the temperature right about the same as green turf. And so it's a comfort level that people might strive for as their neighborhoods change and as more and more cities put an end to just straight wall-to-wall turf.
Right. And you and I were talking a little bit prior to this podcast about certain municipalities in the Denver metro area right now having a ban on green lawns going into new subdivisions at the moment. Now, they might pull back on that, but right now I know there's some areas that have those in place. And also last month in August, Brad Udall, who's a leading climate scientist at Colorado State University, he was speaking in Aspen, I believe, and said, you know, we have to stop saying that we're in a drought. We are no longer in a drought. We are in a full-on aridification of our climate, where the deserts south of us are creeping forward. And in the not distant future, Colorado will become more and more desert.
And it's a good reminder also that even what we have now, before this latest drought kicked in, was really artificial. We are meant to be a high plains desert in Denver. And what was here before white people moved west was cottonwoods along creeks. And indigenous people lived very well with that and lived healthily with that. But it was not green turf everywhere you go and perennials that take a lot of water and flower beds. And so what he's saying is that it's a reminder that we can creep back toward that. And it would be much better if we stayed in control and try to change the way we treat the landscape so that we are prepared for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Thank you for reminding us also about the one-year anniversary of the Temperature Newsletter. It drops in the inbox of premium subscribers every Wednesday. I've read every single edition for the last year. I love what you and John Engel do on the impact and interface between healthcare and climate change. And I hope you keep it up and that folks take a minute and subscribe to it. And thank you for dropping by today and to everyone who helped produce today's podcast, as well as our production partners, Pirate Audio. And I hope everyone out there has a wonderful day and that you can join us for the next Daily Sun Up podcast.
Read more on this story at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. A deadly shooting in which police killed a 22-year-old man as he sat inside a car in Clear Creek County has highlighted a shortage of emergency resources for people in mental distress. 40 of Colorado's 64 counties lack a co-responder program that embeds a mental health professional with law enforcement on police calls, even though the state makes funding available for those programs. Christian Glass, the man who died in the shooting in June, had called police asking for help. He was shot 5 times after brandishing a knife during a standoff that followed his 911 call. The escape of a minimum security inmate in Delta County this summer effectively shut down a touted prison work program called Take Two. That's a setback for businesses struggling to find workers amid a historically tight labor market. The program this summer let 59 low-risk inmates work outside prison walls shortly before their release. Now it has been halted before businesses had a chance to warn customers or revise work schedules, costing some thousands of dollars in canceled orders and reduced hours. A Department of Corrections spokeswoman says officials are reviewing how the Take Two program is administered and are addressing prison staffing shortages. Colorado's first virtual livestock fencing program has grown from one rancher with about 135 cows to more than 2,000 cows in its first 2 years. It also covers 500,000 acres in Eagle and Garfield counties. The Bureau of Land Management says the program helps the agency improve rangeland by managing grazing more efficiently than unwieldy, expensive barbed wire fences. It also gives ranchers unprecedented control of their livestock. 10 broadcast towers create virtual fences, and cows are outfitted with shock collars that vibrate and beep and ultimately deliver a harmless jolt if they wander off course. The BLM says more broadcast towers are on the way. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again tomorrow. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And the Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month. And if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our politics newsletter, The Unaffiliated, as well as our outdoors newsletter, The Outsider, and our new health and environment newsletter, The Temperature. All three exclusive newsletters delivered to your inbox every week.